You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story in internet form, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Yes, you're very welcome along to Talking Rugby, episode 11, with myself, Dave O'Grady. Once again, it's been a terrific World Cup campaign, and New Zealand have won it for the first time since the World Cup started. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan, who's in Limerick. Alan, how are you?
Very good.
Not too bad. Pedro in sunny Spain, or should I say sunny Cork. Are you well, Pedro?
I'm very well, thank you. It's not raining down here.
Good man. I no doubt you probably have a fire going on.
I actually do.
Legend stuff. And we're delighted to be joined, making his debut on Talking Rugby, is of course Tig from all the way in Tralee. Tig, I didn't know if rugby is too big down in Kerry.
I would have thought a couple of years ago the same thing, but when you're driving around the moors of Kerry and you see a Munster flag flying in the middle of nowhere, then you know it's catching on.
Wow, that's incredible. A red flag flying down in Kerry, Jenny.
I know.
What's going on? You have a funny story about a sheep. Now, let's not get too blue on this, but tell it as far as you can there, Tig.
I'll keep it as PC as I can. I was down in southwest Kerry today, and I saw sheep in a field, as you do when you're down in southwest Kerry. And on one side of him, he had a rugby ball spray painted onto him. And on the other side, he had an Irish flag, a tricolour. I don't know, is that very politically correct when we come to rugby? But I'm seeing more on that. But
It was quite the sight. That's quite incredible. Jenny, you'd wonder what type of people actually go out of their minds to go out of their way to actually put that kind of work into a sheep. I feel a bit sorry for the sheep. Was it a good design, was it?
Oh, no, it was terrible. But at least I could tell that it was a rugby ball, in fairness. He did a good job.
Okay, rugby sheep in Kerry. It used to be the old county colours, and now it's turned to rugby. Well, let's get started, lads. I guess the World Cup final, New Zealand have finally reached the promised land, albeit a very interesting second half in which France really could have been the mystery team of the tournament, and we would have been saying all sorts of things. It would be, I guess, the hardest analytical performance we would have all had to do had France got there in the end. Alan, what did you make of the final? We all said New Zealand would do what they did, but were France the better team?
There's no doubt France were the better team. And I think that it was important that they did put up a great fight, which they did, because the World Cup as a tournament needed it. We said it last week that the World Cup has been, in my view, a bit disappointing. Maybe the lads will disagree with me, but yeah, France were the better team. But to be honest, I think it's justice that New Zealand won, because New Zealand have been the best team throughout the whole tournament. And France, had they won, I think there'd be new research into sports psychology as to how France won that. So I think for the rugby status quo, probably better that New Zealand won that.
Yeah, how about that, Tig? Do you think that... would you go along with Alan there? France were the better team, and had France won, would you be, as a rugby fan, be adjusting your aerials down there in Tralee the opposite way and not watching any more rugby? Would you be that disgusted, or are you happy that New Zealand won the game?
Well, I'd say you'd want to be blind, deaf and dumb to not see that France were the better team. I mean, it's said that they have at least one good game in them in a campaign, and this was by far and away certainly their best game. They brought their A game, and but for the typical bumbling, arrogant South African referee, I'm joking. I'd say, yeah, they were by far the better team. And New Zealand, for lack of a better word, choked.
Yeah, indeed. But at least they, you know, the monkey is off their back. And Pedro, I guess for New Zealand, the media hype going into this World Cup was unbelievable, more so than it would be for an English team going into a major tournament. But they finally got there. I mean, when New Zealand, it seems to be in New Zealand, when New Zealand win a match, they're one of the best teams in the world, but they've won the World Cup now. So my God, they must be lapping it up over there.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, because the pressure, like I read some of the stuff the Herald was writing about both teams before the final, and it's like, it was really gutter stuff. Like, I lived in New Zealand for a couple of years, like, and they are very conservative people normally. You know, they're mainly like Scottish Presbyterians. You know, there's no tabloid stuff. But when it comes to rugby, they're a different beast altogether. They're literally like every paper becomes the Sunday World when they're talking about the All Blacks. and that doesn't help them at all. But the manner they won it, just to go back to Alan's point, is great for rugby, because everyone was thinking, okay, this is going to be a walkover, and it wasn't. It was probably the closest final in living memory.
Yeah, interesting. And Tadhg Pedro says there, he talks about, you know, the media and that being a different beast. I know you've seen a few beasts down in Kerry along the lonely roads. So I know you live in Tralee or whatever, but still and all, do you think the pressure on the New Zealand team now, it's the biggest relief for any team? I guess a lot of people around the world were hoping that New Zealand would reach the promised land someday.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Henry said it himself. He said that if they win this game, they get inner peace. And I think Matt Williams said during the week that their lives wouldn't have been worth living for the pain of losing the final. And he was right. I'd say the entire nation were hiding behind their coaches.
Yeah. Alan, what's your view towards referee Craig Joubert? I've been reading a few comments today and in the papers. Some people are calling him one-eyed. Is that a little bit unfair?
Well, I'm looking for the Facebook page. I hate Craig Joubert, to be honest. It's such a disappointment that he didn't ref New Zealand. And there's no doubt that he was one-eyed. I mean, some of the incidents, I think the Kano incident was just unbelievable, how they committed about four penalties in 5 seconds and Joubert, you know, didn't have the balls to make the call. And I wonder about the influence here. I think it's good for business for the IRB that New Zealand won the tournament, and whether Joubert just didn't have the guts to be impartial or was he pushed, I don't know. There's no doubt he was. It's a pressure cooker situation to be in, you know, New Zealand with Richie McCaw, tournament in their own country, the pressure that's on New Zealand, the repercussions for New Zealand rugby should they not win. So, I don't know, unless I suppose you're in his head, it's hard to assess his performance or what he could have done, what he should have done, what he was told to do, etc.
Yeah, yep. Pedro, you probably, obviously you're not inside his head, as Alan was saying. I mean, Alan mentioned a couple of pressure cookers there and a bit of guts and business, you know, back in Ireland, we could do it a bit of business. But do you think that it was a case that New Zealand winning was good for business in what Alan was saying there?
It's a road you really don't want to go down, is it? Because then, you know, where does it begin and where does it stop? Like, but let's be honest, like, you know, the All Blacks are the number one brand in rugby, and for them, winning it is good for rugby in general, but it's good for rugby in New Zealand as well, because it is on the way down there a little bit. I think it's kind of plateaued in New Zealand a bit. You know, other games like soccer and that are becoming more popular. So, yeah, I'm glad. I wanted New Zealand to win it regardless, but yeah, Joubert, I wouldn't have given him the gig anyway, to be honest with you, but I didn't think he was that bad.
Yeah, yeah. Tadhg, I guess we have to give credit to the unbelievable performance of the French back row in this game. I mean, we've been given this French team stick of not being united, and some people then said somehow Livermont has been able to unite a French team against himself. But the French back row deserves a few plaudits. We didn't expect that from them.
I mean, yeah, look at who they're going up against. You know, Kano, McCaw, Reid, which is, in my opinion and the opinions of a lot of others, the best back row in the world. It's a very balanced back row. I think Bonaire is probably one of the most unlauded players in the entire squad. He was magnificent for the entire tournament, and his work rate was something else. And the other two lads, Dusatoir and Haran Nordicke, yeah, they've some players in the back row.
Yeah, it's incredible. Alan, would you, as a Munster man, would you be a big fan of this French back row, or particularly their performance in the final?
It was absolutely epic, wasn't it? They were just everywhere. I think, you know, Dusatoir made, what, like 26 tackles, something crazy. And Bonaire was everywhere, as the lad said. And Aaron Ardicky was just the leader, the consummate leader that he always is. Yeah, just there's not many adjectives you can use that can justify how good they played and how really the New Zealand back row were totally wiped off the field. I mean, Kano, who was brilliant actually in the previous games, wasn't really noticed. Kieran Reid was very quiet as well. And these guys, those New Zealanders are world class. So I think when those guys don't really get a mention in the game, when they don't have an influence in the game, it just tells you how well their French counterparts played.
Yeah, Pedro, with your Spanish connections, like, would, obviously you liked a bit of slick brand of rugby, but you need the grunt as well. So no doubt you were impressed with this French back row. It was probably right up your street.
Oh, it was savage, yeah, savage. And, a Basque friend of mine, Harry Donkey, there played very well, I thought. But you know what the best part was for me from the final actually was, and I'll try and isolate the quote on YouTube later on, is like, when the penny finally dropped for Ryan Nugent, right? This guy's been commentating rugby since he's like 8 years old, and he finally figured out that Douzetoir plays open side, even though he's wearing six on his back, like similar to South Africans, because he's been harping on the whole tournament, but convert to second row, Bonaire playing open side. But he doesn't, he plays line side, like, and it was just like, and then move on to the next point. I quite enjoyed that. Actually, we should do a piece on Ryan Nugent, though maybe not if you guys actually want to go into commentating later on, but it.
Yeah, we'll keep things careful now. Let's
hey,
not...
did you know that George Hook dated Ryle Nugent's mother before he met the lovely Ingrid? You'd wonder how Ryle got the job, wouldn't you?
Oh dear. Let's not get political on that. We've got presidential debates going on and we don't want to go down that road. We could if we wanted. I could ask you all that, but we'll stick to the rugby on a player basis, I think it's fair to say. Sure, look, we've been talking about sheep earlier on. How much more political can you get? Alan, please tell me that you have a problem with France getting fined for advancing on the Haka. I mean, isn't that just things like that really sum up good rugby, sum up the, you know, the atmosphere and all? We've seen it happen in the past, getting fined. Is that not a bit over the top?
Well, the rules are there, and I'm sure that France knew about the rules and decided, feck it, you know, let's make a scene here, let's try and get into the Kiwis' heads. Now, I've seen many, many times, I've read stuff about the Haka where the New Zealanders actually appreciate when the teams kind of react to the Haka because it probably hypes them up even more. Now, to be honest, I'd love to know if France did something similar to Samoa's Sivatau or Tonga's War Dance or Fiji's War Dance, would they be fined? Is it just confined to the Haka? To be honest, I think it's just part of us, as Matt Williams said on Satanta, just putting the Kiwis on a pedestal. You know, whether it's cultural or not, and you know, it is cultural, yeah. The Haka is a cultural thing for New Zealand, but it's basically an Adidas marketing product. I mean, everyone knows about the Haka. So many non-rugby supporters know about the Haka. When you say the All Blacks, they think of the Haka. And for there to be a fine for not standing there to watch it and be bored out of your mind watching 90 seconds of people slapping their arms off their thighs and waving their arms around is a bit of a joke, to be honest.
Yeah, Tig, no doubt there's various forms of war dances down there in County Kerry, but would you be completely opposed to this getting fined for advancing on the Haka? I mean, as Alan was saying, it shouldn't be a choice where they have to just stand there bored out of the mind where they watch another team just because it's their cultural, you know, it's a culture thing that they have to wait for this team to do some dance in front of them, you know. And of course he made the point about the other Pacific Islands teams and, you know, a lot of other teams down under that do these type of dances. I mean, some of the dances are good and they're entertaining to watch, but I mean, should there be a fine for advancing on it? I mean, you're not exactly breaking any rules, you're not directly coming in contact with anybody.
Teams should be allowed to do what they want against the Haka. I think this is outrageous. I mean, it just reminds me back of 09 in the under 20 World Cup. The Irish under 20s fronted up to the Baby Blacks Haka, and the reaction was just, the commentator was having none of it. I nearly threw my remote through my television because he was saying that the Irish players aren't worthy to stand up to the New Zealand Haka. I think it's a 10,000 fine is it. A bit of a joke in general. If they're going to do it, then they should do it properly. But,
yeah.
But I think in general, teams should be allowed to do what they want against the Haka. Making up rules for something that's, I mean, I like the Haka, but at the end of the day, it's a silly dance.
Yeah, what about that, Pedro? It's a silly dance, and I mean, what can you do in response to the Haka? What should an Irish team maybe do in response to the Haka?
Well, how do we respond to that culturally?
Yeah.
I suppose. I don't want to go down that road either because you won't stop me. But
What would you go to? As an Irish team using our own culture going into a match like that, and New Zealand were doing
It has to be Riverdance, doesn't it? Like, you could do like a little circle of Riverdance, and then Flatley would burst out from behind and kick Mitchie McCaw in the face with a high kick. That's it. There is no comeback from that, is it? Like, knocked out by Flatley. Like, they might as well just leave, concede the match.
Yeah, the speed of the legs would no doubt scare the bejesus out of the All Blacks. There's no doubt about that.
It's gone a bit precious though, hasn't it? Like, it come back, like, and to be fairness, it's the IRB again. It is back to Alan's point. You know, it's brand Adidas. Like, I don't think the Kiwis are as precious about it, but I think it's done its bit. Like, I've no problem with the likes of Samoa and Tonga, you know, tribal warriors doing a haka. But like, the All Blacks is like 14 white guys and token Perry Weepu pretending they're tribal warriors, like, come on now. And you expect me to stand here and clap you?
Well,
like, I'm going to start practicing behind the goals, or either that, I'm going to laugh at you. Like.
Well, Pedro, in fairness, Pedro, they learn it. A lot of Kiwis, no matter what ethnicity they are, they learn it from a young age coming up in school, you know, when they're just playing rugby, they learn it as, you know, their own culture kind of thing. So I guess we can't really,
I'll give them that, yeah, but so why can't we run onto the field as a bunch of Celtic warriors, like, with axes and blood all over our faces?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit of a Hollywood idea. Actually, yeah, you mentioned, like, Adidas, and it's almost like sponsorship is dictating, you know, you have to have the haka has to be seen on television. Money is overrunning. What do you think about that?
Well, it is. Look at the money that Adidas put into the game, so it is there. It's the number, like, if you ask a casual rugby follower about rugby, what's the number one thing that pops into their head straight away? Or even people who don't know anything about rugby, they'll say it's New Zealand doing the haka. So
yeah,
trademarked it at this stage, and they pump so much money into the IRB. The IRB are going to make up the rules to suit them. So
all right, well, we'll dance our way out of that situation. And Alan, do such were named IRB Player of the Year. Is it IRB politics, or what do you think?
Yes.
Wow.
Deep. Well,
deep. Because, no, well, I mean, look, I think if you really want to get conspiracy theorists about it, it's related to Craig Joubert and the All Blacks winning the tournament. So they say, right, okay, we've robbed France, let's just give their captain the IRB Player of the Year.
That sounds a bit like...
Having said that, though, I mean, Dusa Tuar was unbelievable in the final. But was he the best player of the year? I don't think so. He might be in the top three, but certainly not the top one. And I have a feeling that, you know, there's a bit of politics behind that. I mean, we've given out before about it, the IRB World Player of the Year, where in 2009, Richie McCaw got the award, having been, I think, injured half the year, when O'Driscoll was brilliant in every single game he played, and he didn't get the award. So I wouldn't place much credence in that award, to be honest. There just seems to be too much goings on behind who gets it.
Yeah, we're getting actually an online text in here from a couple of people. Somebody, I think Peter in Malahide, texted in, do you have your tinfoil hat on, Alan? The IRB can read your mind if you don't wear it. What do you think of that, Alan?
No comment.
Good man. Tyke, what do you think about this whole thing, Dusa Tuar? Do you think he deserved it? Maybe he was the best player in the competition.
Well, I think the IRB Player of the Year award is just a joke. It's a farce, in my opinion. I mean, apparently club form doesn't come into it at all, but that's horse manure, you know, because you can't say McCaw deserved the 09 Player of the Year on international form alone. And why doesn't it take club form into account in the first place? You know, the Heineken Cup and the Super 15 are international tournaments. So I think it's a farce if performances in those aren't even taken on board.
Yeah, no, I was waiting for a little bit of horse manure to come in when we had a lad down there in Tralee. I know, honestly, sorry, lads, no, that's not fair.
It's all true, it's all true.
It was
well good. Said, Dave, well said, well said.
Right, lads, let's look at the World Cup as a whole. I mean, some people say it was good, some people say it was bad. Pedro, if you were to pick, say, your World Cup 15 and that, who would be in it? I mean, it's hard enough, I guess, with the unpredictability of France, the skill and quality we've seen from New Zealand, the beautiful flashes from Australia, the great win by Ireland, but defeat to Wales, the power of Wales, but yet bottling it. England, the usual. You know, what do you think? Who would make it if you were to pick out a few players?
It's hard to say. I'd probably go on consistency over all the games because, you know, we saw from the French some brilliant performances on the day, but then they were anonymous for a lot of the tournament. Standout, do you want from 1 to 15 or the standout players?
Hit us with a team there, yeah.
Healy, I thought, was wonderful for a guy playing in his first World Cup. He was wonderful in every game. I thought Servat was incredible. Only Lieberman would take Servat off in any game just to give the other team an advantage. Very fair of him. Mm. I thought Franks was excellent for New Zealand, again, for a guy making his debut. There was a couple of, there was a nice kind of few Indian summers for a couple of the second row guys. Both Brad Thorne and Danny Rousseau, who wouldn't have been even thought of, were excellent, I thought. The back row is a nightmare because the three best players I have in the back row are all open sides. I thought Sean O'Brien was excellent, Pocock was excellent, and Warburton was fantastic. He's going to haunt us till we all die.
That sounds like a very good second row, actually.
Just for a bit of novelty. Mike Phillips was having his usual, I'll play well every 3 years, and he did, in fairness to him. Preston wins by lack of competition. It was a disappointing year for the tens, wasn't it? Mm. There was no real standout. Preston was excellent. Centres, Nonu was fantastic. Sonny Bill Williams was a disaster every time he replaced Nonu, which I was delighted to see. Jamie Roberts, again, was doing his usual, I'll play well every 2 years.
That seems to be a Welsh thing, though, Pedro.
Yeah, it would give me hope. When we do a Six Nations talk, it would give me hope for Six Nations, because I don't know if a lot of those Welsh guys can maintain their form. Like, you know, Roberts is terrible up to this year, Phillips is terrible up to this year. Okay, Warburton is going to be fantastic, but we'll see. Anyway,
you wouldn't stick an old Scottish player in there?
I can't think of any, no.
No, okay.
Doody MacDull. I'm sure he plays somewhere. The back row. And then James North. Is it James North?
Yeah.
George North.
Yeah. George North. Sorry, I thought he was fantastic. For a 19-year-old, he was wonderful. Clark, God, I hate him. I really, really hate him, but he was fabulous. Like, he's like a soccer player in a rugby jersey. And, you know... Okay, when Warburton's spearing him, you're going, go on, push a little harder.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear.
Come on, it's all right, lads. You can admit it now. And then at fullback, everyone was raving on about Dagg, and I think Dagg is grand, but he goes missing when he's under real pressure. Now, he'll come good because he's fantastic. I would have had Corey Jane at fullback, even though he plays on the wing, because he would catch a concrete block dropped from a 5-story building. He literally caught everything in the rain. He's a classic fullback for me.
Yeah, I mean, and that was it. That's a good point, Pedro. And Alan, especially in that rain, and we've seen a lot of those games had fairly heavy downpours, and to catch balls in those conditions were unbelievable. And I guess, Alan, you probably, would you agree with that point that Pedro made about the tens? There wasn't any standout performers in the World Cup.
No, there wasn't really many tens. I think... Just on my team, I had the same, Phillips and Priestland. I'm sure if Carter had stayed fit, he would have been definitely the number 10, because if you saw how well he played against France in the pool stages, he was just irresistible. And it was a big shame for the tournament that as the Kiwis might call him, His Holiness Dan Carter got hurt. And I think Priestland really was the only choice there. Just on the pack, I went for the same front five as Pedro, just bar a massive tight head. As Pedro said,
he's a lazy sauce, though, Alan. Sorry, jump in on it. He is. He's a brilliant scrummager, like, but he's as lazy as sin. He's anonymous in games, bar the scrum.
Well, look, like, the first job of a prop is to scrummage. And I think Mass was brilliant every game he played in the scrum. Because, if you recall, he was actually injured... Coming into it, and against New Zealand in the pool, where Duke Alcon played at tight head, and he's definitely not in Mass's class. I agree with you. I suppose he doesn't do a lot of work around the field, but in terms of his scrummaging, in terms of his main priority as a prop, he does his job.
Yeah, he's the best in Europe easily, yeah.
Yeah,
they say Ireland should have a player actually like that, you know, that would get just stuck into those, you know, do the dirty work. I mean, we've seen with the Irish team, Sean O'Brien, he's a different type of player or whatever, but we need more of those type of players.
Desperately so, yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose, we have Mike Ross for that, don't we? I mean, his play around the field has actually improved a lot in the last 12 months. But again, his first priority is the scrummaging.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, we do have a player in that kind of role. Just on the back row, I went for two French and one Kiwi. I went for Dusatoir, McCaw, and Aaron Ardicky. Very, very difficult.
You're playing Dusatoir at blindside there, Ryle, are you?
Yes. Well, look, I suppose Dusatoir, after his performance in the final, where a leader like him really, really had to step up to the mark when they were getting...
It was unbelievable. Written off in the face there.
Everyone. I suppose he had to play well, didn't he? I mean, you saw his face after the France-Tonga match where he just didn't know what to say. But yet he picked, you know, obviously they kicked off, they kicked the Lieberman out of the picture, and and himself, Dusatoir, Aaron Ardicky, Yashvili, Mass and Rougerie, these type of players obviously took control. So that's why I have Dusatoir there. I've McCaw down at 7. Maybe a controversial one because Pocock was probably more impressive when his teammates around him were playing terribly. But McCaw, I mean, he was playing with a screw in his ankle and he was basically half fit through the whole tournament.
He would have failed any drug test they gave him. The guy was on so much meds, like, it's convenient there's no testing for the final, wasn't it?
We've got a lot of we've got Jim Corr over here, Pedro Corr, all the way from Spain. Actually, I've seen Jim Corr, the way he dresses is kind of like a Spanish lad, so I'm getting a little bit suspicious there.
I'm in a tinfoil tent as we speak. They'll never find me.
Alan, is that it, Alan?
Well, Rahara Nordicki as well, absolutely okay. Sensational at number 8. And then I suppose at the centres, yeah, Roberts and Nonu. Roberts was just sensational. He's back to his Lions form. And Nonu, just brilliant every game. And Sonny Bill Williams had a prayer of getting into the team with Nonu in such brilliant form. In the back three, I went for the Kiwi back three, Kahui and Jane and Israel Dagg. I think no comparison. Maybe Ione could have snuck in there, but I think as a back three unit, those guys were just sensational.
Interesting.
It's interesting that there's no wingers amongst them, though, Alan, isn't it? Like, they were brilliant, I agree with you, but like, there's like two fullbacks in the centre there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kahui in particular, because when the squads were announced, I looked at Kahui and thought, listen, you know, this guy's getting injured all the time, and he's just going to be the fourth choice centre, and he won't get a look in. And he got a start on the wing against, what was the first game? Against Tonga, when there was injuries, and he just never looked back, and he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and I think if you get a start on the wing against Tonga and you do well in a game, because they are quite a physical team, your confidence would be pretty high.
I think that's a bit unfair in Tonga. They actually played quite well in that game. And Kahui, he showed a lot of skills. I mean, I think he got a couple of tries, but he had to work for them. I think one of them was a chip over the top. And he showed some great skills.
But I know, I mean that, though. If you can handle the physicality of Tonga, you know, you're going to do in a tournament, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, he's a strong fella. His problem was getting injured, and I think he got a knock during the tournament, but he seemed to shake it off and played brilliantly in the knockout stages. And then, yeah, just back to Pedro's point, yeah, all fullbacks, I suppose. Well, the others, Jane and Dag, yeah, both fullbacks. As you said, Jane basically acted like a second fullback during the whole tournament, and I think, yeah, fullback is his natural position, but you need a guy of his class on the field, so you stick him on the wing, I suppose.
Yeah, okay, Tiger, you're playing rugby championship manager after this World Cup. You're forming this unbelievable dream team that's going to go on, and instead of the British and Irish Lions, you're going to have Tiger's Lions. Who would be in it? And you can pick a whole world team from this World Cup.
Well, my two props would be Healy and Franks. I don't think there's as much difference between most of my team to the lads, but maybe it's South African bias kicking in, but I'd actually have Bismarck Duplessis in the front row at hooker. Fair enough, he didn't really start many games throughout the course of the tournament because of John Smith, but I thought his impact off the bench was was something else, and enough to push him into my team anyway.
Could people argue, Tyke, that could be down to your South Africa, that could be politics down to your South African background? Of course, you have a family from South Africa.
Yeah, but I just think his impact was unreal, you know, on every game he played in. He just shades it over Servat in my opinion, but I'd have him there. And I'd agree with Alan as well on Rousseau in the second row. I have a bit of a man crush on Rousseau, and I have to be honest here. I thought he was absolutely unreal for the entire tournament. And he was always on the end of but I think he scored a few tries as well, but he was involved in everything that South Africa did that was good. Fair enough. That wasn't much, but he was thereabouts for pretty much every good move they had. Back row, Kano O'Brien and Aaron Ordicky. I think Kano, very surprised he didn't get the World Player of the Year. And I'd have O'Brien there just because, I mean, come on, it's Sean O'Brien. He has to be in someone's World 15.
Yeah.
Aaron Ordicky, yeah, great tournament at number 8. Phillips and Priestland will be my halfback combination. Phillips, I mean, he's just too handsome for his own good, really. But I think... He, as Pedro said, he tends to play well every 3 years. I'd agree with that. He kind of turns up at the right times for Wales. And Priestland was a surprise to me because I thought he was absolutely rubbish in his last few seasons with Scarlets. And he comes out of nowhere and puts in the performances that he did for Wales. Took me by surprise and took a lot of other people by surprise. I'd have Ashton on my left wing. I think his strike rate was very good throughout the tournament. And I know a lot of people don't like him. I know
he's the terror of Romanian defences.
I know.
Well, that's a little bit harsh. Now, come on, Pedro. A little bit out of control
it's just
there.
Quite out of.
Pedro's the self-nominated troll of the group.
That's done.
I'd have. I wouldn't break up the New Zealand centre partnership at all. I think Nanu and Smith had a fantastic tournament, and Jane. And Dag, I mean, he has an unfortunate name. I don't know if you're up on your Australian/New Zealand slang, lads, but if you look up the definition of Dag, I think you'll be a bit surprised as to what it means. It has to do with sheep, unsurprisingly. It's coming from me, so it's a sheep.
Can you believe this
reference.
Guy? Okay, that's a good team. We got to get those three teams down on paper and we talk tactics on whose team it defeat whose. I tell you, if you could customize a rugby game, it would be interesting to see. Lads, player of the tournament. Alan, I'm going to start with you. A lot of people are saying there's a lot of, it was a tournament that forwards dominated. What do you think?
Difficult. I suppose, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah,
come
I'm
on.
Not sure. Yeah, that's a tough one. No one really springs to mind at the moment.
Okay, well, we'll give you Ashton then. right, Pedro, hit us with a player of the tournament. Maybe somebody from the Basque region, no doubt.
Yeah, there's only one of them, and I can't stand Hairy Donkey, like, so. No, for me, it was Pocock. For two reasons, because he showed how important he was in the team when they played South Africa.
And how important
and how
he
much
was.
They missed him. Yeah, exactly. When they played against Ireland, like, he's just savage, like, he really is. He's a freak of nature. So, and I thought he played well in all the other games as well. And then when he came back against Wales, again, he was dominant again. I know Wales are missing Warburton, but still, yeah, I give it to Pocock.
Yeah. Tyke, what about you? You wouldn't give Quade Cooper a look.
I was just about to say Quade Cooper. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Nice one. Yeah, I think.
No, I'd have Kano there. I thought he was brilliant all tournament and put a foot wrong. And, everyone talks about McCall, but, I just think Kano is, he has been better than McCall this season for sure. And, very surprised he didn't get the player of the year.
Yeah, it's gas. We're getting a couple of texts in of people who really aren't taking this exercise seriously. Some people are saying that Tony Buckley deserves it. Another one says Gorgodze of Georgia deserves it. Although Georgia, you know, I guess we didn't see what we should have seen from Georgia at this World Cup. We weren't going to get too much of them. But
I thought they were fantastic, to be honest. Gorgodze, I think he's 35 or 36 now? I think he might be.
He's been around a while, yeah.
Yeah, he had a great World Cup. I think the Minnows in general had a great World Cup.
Alan, what was your moment of the tournament? And you could be biased and say it was an Irish one, but if you were to exclude Ireland from, no, leave Ireland in, but be honest and not political like we're used to.
Argentina's try to beat Scotland, Amorosino's try, was just brilliant. And I think you had to feel for Scotland because they played two games where they were in with a shout of beating England and Argentina with 5 minutes to go, and then just let their concentration let them down, and they absolutely blew it, and they really should have got through. So yeah, I think Amorosino's try was very good. Also, another Argentinian moment was the try they scored against New Zealand, which was probably the try of the championship. Where their back row burned McCaw. I think McCaw's ankle was half fecked, and the Argentinian number 8, whose name escapes me, burned him, and then Contepomi showed unbelievable hands to feed another player in the corner, and I think some of the New Zealanders had the words choke in their mind for about 5 seconds.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That guy is an amateur, sorry to jump in and tell your point, Alan, but it's a very good one. The number 8 for Argentina, he's actually an amateur player, wasn't he?
And yeah, that's right.
Destroying the best back row player of all time.
Yeah, and I think Reid missed the tackle as well, so it was an unbelievable run.
For me, it had shades of, remember when, I can't pronounce this, Ndenwe burned Habana last time round?
Yeah.
You know, here's an amateur player beating the best winger in the world, like burning him, like that was better, but still seeing McCaw on his arse.
Yeah. Pedro, what's your moment of the tournament? And please don't say the spear tackle.
No. We don't condone violence here. After watching Sean O'Brien literally run through men for the whole World Cup, to see Shane Williams get in underneath him in the quarterfinal, and that's when hope died.
Oh.
That was it. That was the moment of the tournament for me, and it was a bad one. It was like, you know, O'Brien is unstoppable. He literally destroyed Australia on his own. And here's little river dance Shane Williams underneath, smiling like a leprechaun. It's like, you'll never get me lucky charms. And he's just underneath the ball. Like, that's it. Game over. You know, the tournament's. Let's go home.
Yeah, that's a Welsh highlight there. Tig, surely you won't go for the old Riverdance Shane Williams there.
No, I'm a bit of an old romantic. I love an underdog story, so I have to say Tonga's win over France is probably my moment of the tournament, especially the last 5 minutes when I believe everyone's seen that video on YouTube of the Tongan front row yelling blue murder at the French front row when they were packing down for that scrum in the last few minutes of the game. When they knew they had it won, I thought it was fantastic.
Amazing stuff altogether. Guys, before we move on, I'll just quickly go to Alan. Alan, did you like best about this tournament? I know, you know, there was enough negatives and about it, but what positives can we take?
I think that one of the nice things was actually the performance of the Minnows. If you exclude Fiji, who were useless, but... obviously, as the lads mentioned there, Tonga beating France was incredible. Tonga in general, they gave New Zealand a bit of a fright for 20 minutes. USA did well against us. Yeah, I think that the Minnows did do pretty well. None of the big sides got three-figure scores against them, which was good.
Yeah.
I suppose positive... I suppose Wales, I think Wales one of the big positives because they were getting written off and they managed to produce when it really, really mattered in the World Cup. I know they were disappointing against France, but they were disappointed to lose against France, but I think they did very well to get to the semi. And again, France turning up when it mattered in the final instead of there being a 30-point drubbing.
Yeah. And Pedro, what did you not like about the tournament?
I thought the scheduling seemed to kind of shag over the smaller nations. I understand, you know, there's like TV rights and you want all the big tier teams playing at the weekends when the viewing numbers are higher, but like...
That caused a lot of outrage on Twitter.
Yeah, there was. that Simone guy, God, he had a good go at it, like, but the turnaround was nuts, like, you know, because when Samoa played Wales, they played a game 3 days beforehand, and then when they played South Africa, they played 3 days beforehand, you know, And there wasn't much between Samoa and Wales in the pool game, and Samoa gave South Africa a very hard game despite only having, you know, 3 days break. So I'd like to see it spread out more evenly next time.
Mm. I think one thing that's fair to say, lads, and we've had it here on Talking Rugby while discussing all the international types of games, it conjures up debates, politics, craziness, sheep, and everything else. It's been absolutely thrilling to talk about the World Cup, and I want to speak actually to Tadhg about turning your attentions homeward, but not Ireland, more like South Africa, the Currie Cup final, Golden Lions taking on the Sharks. That's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, it's kind of a surprise final to a lot of South African supporters. The Lions had a pretty bad Super 15 campaign, and no one expected them to be in the running. The Currie Cup is kind of, in fairness, it's a bit of a Mickey Mouse competition. It's become a bit of a Mickey Mouse competition because, you know, you have a situation where for the majority of the season, the national players are away at camp or whatever, and then boom, you're in knockout stages and all the box come back, and the players who have been there all season, who have worked harder to get their teams into the position they are all of a sudden out of the reckoning. But the final, I'd say it'll be tighter than most people think. It'll be tighter than, well, this is a family show. I'll just say it'll be very tight.
Holy God. Yeah, it's going to be.
It's painted black and blue with a rugby ball on its head.
There we go. You need a bit of Kerry there to get it up. What do you think about the game, Pedro? Do you think it's going to be do you think it's going to be a close one? And, you know, I guess with the, you know, international players gone, can we call it a Mickey Mouse game? Because a lot of these players will be looking to really, you know, stake a claim in the team.
Well, the Africans take it very seriously. Like, so, even the second stringers, it's war for them. I love watching the Currie Cup. It's literally war. Like, the defences aren't great. There's lots of scrummaging. There's lots of points scored because they basically knocked the defenders unconscious after about 55 minutes. But I'd like to talk to Tadhg on this one a bit because it's some really interesting matchups in the game. It's like we have two young out halves, like there's Elton Jantes for the Lions and there's Patrick Lambie for the Sharks. And we're hoping these are the future of South African rugby because Mornay Steyn, they're never going to go any further than where they are with him. Like,
I don't think Lambie's a 10. I prefer him at 15, but
I don't. I think he's better at 10 because his defense is so good. Like, did you ever watch him at 10? He's controlling, but like he's the most. I think he's textbook perfect tackler. He'll stop a man dead in his tracks at 10, and he's wasted at 15. I played them both, and he's been great at 15 for South Africa, but we'll see.
Well, there's no doubt he'll definitely be the future 10 for the Sharks, and maybe even South Africa, but. I just think he's just a little bit small for 10 in the modern game.
Doesn't seem to affect him though. Have you seen the guy tackling?
It's not necessarily size, it's physicality, and he can be caught out, alright.
Yeah, he is raw, like. Janchis is a similar kind of player than
Janchis is incredible. He's
Earl Rose.
He's small himself, but he's an unbelievable tackler.
Yeah. He is. He's very powerful, like, so I'm hoping one of them would push on.
What about, I just want to talk a bit about Josh Strauss. He believes that his side can go all on the way in the Currie Cup campaign. I think they had a 29-20 victory against Western Province over the weekend, but, I mean, it's got to be awkward playing with a beard like that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's got to get a little itchy under that. That's like a woolly jumper, and you'd be used to those down there, Tadhg. I mean, it's got to be a little bit uncomfortable.
Kerry stuff, huh?
What do you think about that, lads?
He's cut the head off Matfield only with more beard. He's an absolute beast. He's come from he's relatively come from nowhere. He's been thereabouts for a few years now, and he's kind of considered somewhat a bit of a journeyman in South African rugby, but. Yeah, he's been an incredible leader for them throughout the entire Currie Cup campaign.
The whole Lions team are journeymen, really, aren't they? Like, this is kind of the beauty of it. It's like the Sharks. You'd recognize anyone who recognized the Sharks 1-15 because they're all more or less.
I hate that term, journeyman. It's a terrible, terrible term.
It is, yeah. But you know what I mean.
But if you looked that up in a dictionary, boom, you'd get a picture of Josh Strauss. Now, I don't mean that in any disrespect to Josh Strauss.
It's not that bad.
No. I just mean in terms of, you know, the first image that comes into your head when you think of a man like that. But, I mean, fair enough. I mean, maybe Ireland need a few of those type of players in the team.
Men with beards? I'm not so sure.
Well, you know, I always...
Did Tony Buckley have a beard? And we know how that ended. Like, oh, well, I think we'll move on. Well,
Ian Humphries, lads. Ian Humphries.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He played pretty well with his beard, too. Maybe there is something.
A traffic cone with a beard doesn't really work out when it's defense,
But the thing about it is, you know, a beard like Josh Strauss is one thing, but when you're doing, you know, they were all doing the charity thing in the Movember, and then they all had moustaches. I mean, I don't think that put the fear into God into any opposition.
Just, I don't know.
What are we even talking about, Dave?
I think Ireland's going to be doing Movember this year, I think.
We were talking about the chances that the Lions had in the Curry Cup series, and as you were saying...
There, Tig, who do you think will win?
Who do I think will win? Yeah, well, the Lions says Sharks, the head says Lions. I mean, the balk factor for the Sharks is very tangible. You know, they've, in my opinion, the best hooker in the world. The best front row in South African rugby. And but you never know, the Lions have thrown up a few surprises this season, and I just think the Sharks will pull through in the end.
Lads, just a question there. Is there a link between the Lions' performance in Super Rugby and their performance in the Curry Cup? Because they've been pretty terrible in Super Rugby for a few years now, but yet in the Curry Cup, they're still there and thereabouts. Is there any kind of link to that?
No, they've been terrible in the Curry Cup for a while as well, Anna.
It's generally because I think... the majority of the franchises in South Africa, like the Stormers and the Lions and the Blue Bulls, they draw from the same provincial teams that will be in the Curry Cup. So the likes of the Lions will draw from a couple of the teams that are above in Northern South Africa, and the likes of Western Province will draw from, you know, the places in Port Elizabeth and East London and stuff like that. So what you see is during the Super 14, you have a lot of Springboks that are in the bigger franchises, like Western Province and like the Blue Bulls and Sharks. But the Golden Lions don't have any Springboks in their team. So they don't have any players with that experience and that level of ability in the Super 14. And then you go into the Curry Cup, and they can do well all of a sudden because all the Springboks are out of the picture. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a level playing field then, I think.
Well, I think we might just all go and take a curry of our own now after this. Lads, listen, thanks a million for joining us on Talking Rugby, the 11th podcast. I'm delighted to once again have had Alan from Limerick. Thanks a million, Alan.
Thanks again, Dave.
Thanks a million, Pedro. Gracias, señor.
Gracias, señorita.
And Tig, all the way in Kerry with a warm fire in front of him. Thanks a million, Tig.
No bother.
And we'll be back next time for more action. We'll also be featuring our Munster-Leinster clash with Munster-Leinster fans. So hopefully, there we go. Hopefully that doesn't get a little bit carried away. Until then, a very good day. You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.